Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today is an exciting day on Franchise Today, as my guest will be International Franchise Association President and Chief Executive Officer, Steve Caldera. You know, upon announcing the appointment of Caldera to the helm at the IFA, Association Chairman Ken Walker was quoted as saying, "As the franchise industry continues to work through a challenging economic and political climate, the search committee recognized that the IFA was going to need a passionate leader that had the strategic and tactical abilities to bridge the critical areas of public policy, communications, and member services. And clearly, Steve is that leader, and we're thrilled that he will guide the IFA for many years to come." Further, he went, his unique blend of political, corporate, franchising, trade association, and fundraising experience will further strengthen and facilitate IFA's mission to protect, enhance, and promote franchising. And Steve Caldera previously served as Executive VP of Global Communications and Chief Public Affairs Officer for Dunkin' Brands, Inc., where he was in charge of worldwide communications for all internal and external audiences, as well as government affairs, corporate social responsibility, customer relations, and the Dunkin' Brands Community Foundation. Steve has been named one of the top 50 influencers by Nation's Restaurant News and a rising star by Campaigns and Elections and Restaurant Hospitality Magazine, respectively. Wow. Steve is active in several food service industry foundations and organizations and is also a member of the corporation at Johnson & Wales University. Steve, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's certainly great to have you here today, and I know I could just imagine how busy you are with all that's going up on, you know, on the Hill, with the economic outlook that is coming out, and I believe the IFA is doing a webinar on tomorrow with the IFA convention on the horizon. Being fairly new to the helm, although it has been almost 8 or 9 months by now. I mean, I'm really flattered that you had the opportunity to take some time and be with us today. We really appreciate that.
Yep, my pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, one of the goals of the, basically, you know, the franchise community wants to know a little bit more about Steve Caldera. I know you you have a franchising background, so you're certainly not a stranger there, and you seem to have a passion for franchising. And I think it's great to have an IFA leader with that franchising experience. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't recall anyone else, at least in recent years, having the actual franchising experience being at the top of the IFA. Am I correct in saying that?
I'm not quite sure of all my, you know, the previous CEOs, my predecessors, what their level of franchise experience would be. But clearly, they were all proficient, astute leaders that helped to grow the association incrementally over the past 20 years. What I can say is that I've been involved in franchising indirectly and or directly for the last 15 years through my work at the National Restaurant Association, PepsiCo, and Dunkin' Brands, of course, which is one of the founding members of the IFA dating back to 1960. So I feel like I am well-versed, but learning each and every day, as we all strive to do.
Absolutely. And like I said, you seem to really have a passion for franchising. Why franchising?
Well, I think it's the entrepreneurial spirit that drives franchising. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges, and quite frankly, it's also one of the biggest opportunities we have, especially with, you know, over 90 members of 90 new members coming into Washington between the House and the Senate, is to educate them on what the franchising industry is all about, the economic impact we deliver, to make sure that they understand that franchising is a compilation of both the franchisor, which could be the McDonald's in Oak Brook, Illinois, or the Jack Earl, our incoming chairman, a multi-unit franchisee from Marlton, New Jersey, who has 7 stores in the greater Philadelphia area. So we are, for the most part, franchising is locally owned businesses. And so we need to continue to educate and sustain that awareness on Capitol Hill so they understand that franchising is all about jobs. It's about aspiring and current entrepreneurs creating jobs each and every day. And one thing we know about franchising is that we create jobs.
Absolutely. I think it's really interesting that we continue to have to educate people both in coming into franchising as well as members on Capitol Hill about franchising when, you know, we deal with it day in and day out and probably take a lot for granted. So I do think it's great from an educational perspective. And you've been there with the IFA now since last year. I know it was after the convention. I think it was somewhere around April or May. Am I correct?
Actually, June 15th, but close enough.
Right. And in that short time at the helm, you know, what has surprised you the most?
It's a great question. I would say, and I would put these both in the pleasantly surprised categories, having been involved in the IFA as a supplier with PepsiCo, as an operator with Dunkin' Brands, and then working at the National Restaurant Association in conjunction with IFA, I always knew that the staff was very, very confident, very diligent, just a great staff. I didn't realize how incredibly talented the staff was, how incredibly dedicated they are. You know, we do it lean and mean here at the IFA. You know, I like to say that we fight above our weight class here in Washington. But we are very we are very efficient. You know, with our resources and how we deploy our intellectual capital. So we hire the best and the brightest, and we've had a knack for retaining those folks, and I think it has showed in the increasing relevance and visibility and credibility that we have gained on Capitol Hill and across state houses throughout the United States. So that has been a great pleasant surprise to me to know that the staff I already thought was very talented is exceptionally talented. Then I would say the commitment of the board, special core, and the executive committee has been outstanding. When you look at the time and effort that Ken Walker has put in this year with the departure of Matt over to the National Retail Federation and the search process and spending a couple of days a week here, one night, 2 days a week, almost every week, to work with the staff and help guide the staff, and the dedication that he has shown when he's running a huge business with multiple brands just gives you a sense and a flavor of the dedication that our board members and our officers have. So it's been the engagement of the volunteer board on all the committees and task force that we have that has just opened my eyes to the real commitment and passion that they have for not just the IFA, but the franchising industry as a whole.
Well, certainly we're going to see a very excited and probably a very tired Ken Walker at the IFA convention because that is quite a schedule to follow as well. You know, as you said, running a multiple brands company, a lot of responsibility, a lot of people relying on him, and I know he's done a great job at the IFA in the past year, and certainly I appreciate, and I know many others appreciate. Outside of staff, let's talk about franchising in general. Since you've been at the helm, you know, what's the most interesting thing you've discovered over this past 6 or 7 months?
Well, I don't know if it's interesting, but it's really been more of a validation that there is a direct link or nexus between credit access and job creation. Credit access clearly remains our number one member issue along with franchise sales and development. So between those two, you're talking almost three-quarters of our members' top two issues fall in those categories, and they both have a link to credit access. as you know, Paul, we have worked diligently the last 2 years under the leadership of Matt and David French and the GR team to get SBA provisions in the Small Business Jobs Act that the president signed in September. And in that, one of those provisions was to permanently extend the loan limits from $2 million to $5 million, and then to also keep the reduced borrower fees and the 90% SBA guarantee. The last 2 points have been extended through a continuing resolution Congress passed through March 4th, and the loan limits are permanent. And as the commercial lending sector has dried up, more and more small business folks have turned to the SBA, where in the past it might have been viewed as a lender of last resort. Some would say today that it's a lender of first resort out of necessity due to the tight credit market. What we've seen from and heard from our colleagues at the SBA is that they had an unprecedented record-breaking fourth quarter where they approved 22,000 small business loans totaling almost $12 billion, and of that, 90% is guaranteed through those SBA-approved lenders. So while we're beginning, while clearly the SBA work and provisions were important for franchisees and franchisors and small business entrepreneurs, clearly there's still a long way to go. And even though commercial credit is just starting to loosen up, it's not nearly where it needs to be. And as you know, our growth in this industry is tied in large part to credit access.
Yeah, absolutely. We had Daryl Johnson and Ron Feldman on a couple of times this past year talking about franchise finance, and obviously they're very well versed, shared a great deal of information, and at least let a lot of people truly understand what it's going to take moving forward to be able to access that type of credit that's necessary, because a lot of people that are out there, and as you know, thinking about franchising, want to always think about, you know, the new franchisees coming in. But as we know, this credit limitations that have been put in place have drastically hurt even the current franchisees that are looking to expand into multiple locations and new markets. So definitely, I mean, it's a ripple effect. And as you said, it is going to take some time to grow through this, so that the industry can continue to grow again.
Let me just add on. I agree, Paul. Let me just add on one additional point as it relates to the credit access issue, and that is while we were very proactive on the SBA front, we'll continue to be to the extent that we can. One of the things that we are doing, and I have formed a small business lending working group, is that we are in the conceptual development phases and working very rapidly with franchise leaders, lenders, commercial lenders at the national, regional, and community level, as well as government officials, so we can better understand the challenges that each sector faces and the opportunities and potential solutions that are possible by creating and sustaining a dialogue among these key stakeholders. So, you know, we need to get a better understanding of what will get lenders more actively participating in the recovery without government stimulus. You know, we need to better understand the regulatory and policy perspectives during an economic recovery, understand how franchise small businesses and their systems are adapting to these new economic realities. And we need to develop tools and an approach to match up the supply and demand for franchise community credit. So we're hoping that this summit will take place sometime in April. We should have a little more clarity on that in the next couple of weeks, but we are working and speaking with many of the key stakeholders here in Washington, many of my peers who represent trade associations in the banking and financial community. So we're encouraged by the initial reaction and potential support, which we think is critical, not just in the short term, Paul, but in the long term, that we build and sustain these relationships not only across Washington, but across the United States, so our members have the best shot, both existing and prospective, in franchising as we move forward.
You know, I appreciate you clarifying that and adding that, because I think it was extremely important. And, you know, the last couple of years have certainly been tough within the U.S. and the economic environment that we were faced with. I don't know if we could say, you know, maybe tougher for people in franchising. Maybe it's just too close to home to say. But, you know, I know a great deal of time has been spent analyzing the situation. And it seems to me that what we really faced was the perfect storm of sorts of credit access or in access, housing equity deflation, and the recession. It seems like they've all come together or conspired to dampen franchise development and certainly created the challenges that we're facing as an industry today.
Well, I would say you're right, and but we are where we are, as a good friend of mine would say often to me. And so what we need to continue to do is we need to continue to educate. We need to continue to bring together the key stakeholders to create and sustain that dialogue I talked about, because we know for every $1 million in lending, Paul, that creates 40 jobs. And if you equate that to $1 billion, that's 40,000 jobs. So, you know, while clearly the SBA lending has helped our industry in the short term, we know that we can and must do more to loosen credit. And we're going to continue to hammer away, like we did on the SBA provisions, to show that direct link between credit access and job creation. So, you know, that's where the focus is going to be. You know, we estimated that the SBA used to be, you know, I mentioned as a lender of last resort, and commercial lending has been severely cut back. And we estimated last year, I believe, a 40 to 50% increase in demand and a need for $10 billion in lending. But we fell 34% short of that goal, or $3.4 billion, I believe, which equates to 12,000 franchise businesses that were not developed in 2010. So as we look at 2011 and the economic outlook for franchising, while we had 0.3% growth last year, essentially flat, we're looking at 2.5% growth in terms of establishments, 2.5% growth in terms of jobs, and just under 5% in terms of economic output for $33 billion. So you're talking 20,000 new establishments, you're talking 194,000 jobs, and $33 billion in economic output, and that's based on moderately increased economic outlook for this year. So There is a light at the end of the tunnel, but it's a 40-watt bulb, and you know we want to close the gap between that 40-watt bulb and the 100-watt bulb that we need here in the franchising industry.
And certainly, when there's a light on at the end of the tunnel, it's good to know that it's not a train heading our way, right?
That's always a good thing, yeah.
Definitely a good thing. I know our co-producer on Franchise Today, Joe Caruso, had the benefit of hearing you speak at the D.C. Bar Association. He asked me to tell you that he did enjoy the presentation and your discussion with him afterwards. Matter of fact, he was the one that put it in my ear that afternoon and said, we've got to get him on Franchise Today. So, again, I really do appreciate you being here today. Especially with so much going on. And to that end, let me just break track here a little bit. What is a typical day like for Steve Caldera now leading the IFA?
Well, you know, it's clearly staying in close collaboration with my direct reports, which, as you know, is Lisa Harrison runs our communications and marketing team. John Reynolds is the president of our foundation. Scott Lair heads our international and membership. And Debbie Moss heads up our VP. She's our VP of operations. As you know, David French has left the IFA and is about to begin a new journey at the National Retail Federation as their chief lobbyist. He's going to be sorely missed, big shoes to fill. So a lot of my time right now, Paul, is focused on identifying a potential replacement for David. But that's as it relates to the people piece, and obviously staying in touch with my direct reports on what are the key issues, how can I help them, and in some cases, more importantly, how can I get out of their way so they can do what they're paid to do. But, you know, I'd say an average day consists of, obviously, reading the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, talking to board members, talking to sponsors, talking to my fellow peers across town, probably 3-4 days a week. I'm having lunch with other CEOs, trade association CEOs. I've been working on an agenda for the Small Business Lending Summit with key folks here in town and just gleaning ideas and to make that as successful as we can. I've had several visits with members of Congress so I can get to know them better in my new position. I was very fortunate to spend about 45 minutes with then House Minority Leader John Boehner in late September, and I've run into him a couple of different places across town since. And so it's getting to know the key folks on Capitol Hill. It's getting to know my peers across town. It's getting to work more efficiently and effectively with my senior team as we continue to learn from each other. It's been 7 months. This week I've been at the IFA. And really getting out there at the grassroots level, I was in 42 cities in over 20 states from June 15th through December 15th. So while I may have been a known entity in the restaurant community, one of the things clearly that Ken and the officers told me that they hoped that I would do, and I clearly agreed, was to get out there and try to reach the other segments that represent the 52% of the folks that really don't know me that well. So I've been out there meeting with past chairmen and members of the board and past board members and key sponsors and trade media and members of all kinds, both existing and prospective. So I certainly have a lot of miles on the airlines to show for it, but I think it was something that was something I needed to do. I think it's resonated well. And quite frankly, Paul, that's when you have your ear to the ground, that's when you learn. And for me, this first 6.5 months has been a combination of listening and learning and strategically planning and executing on our strategic plan. So we've been busy, and we feel good about where we are, but we have a long way to go. It's going to arguably this has been the most anti-business, pro-regulatory environment in decades, not just for franchising, but for the business community as a whole. So we need to continue to keep the pedal to the metal for the industry and our membership.
You certainly spent a lot of time flying all over the place, meeting people. I kept track of some of that as it was publicized. And I know you have a wife and family, and you've dedicated a lot to it. I admire that. And
thank you.
It's really important. I mean, obviously, to get the heartbeat of what's going on in the field, the IFA members, so to speak. Since you have a franchising background, and you know, from your perspective, what do you think franchisor IFA members want from their association? And then also, what do you think they need? Because obviously, we know what they want and need are often two different things.
Well, first and foremost, trade associations exist because of advocacy. So our job is to protect, promote, and enhance franchising, and so that means making sure that there are no bills, legislative action, or regulatory action that will negatively impact our franchisor and franchisee community. So I think first and foremost, our job here in Washington is to protect the industry, to be its advocate on Capitol Hill. And as issues come up at the state level, we need to apply the same zeal, if you will, to protect and monitor at the state level. So I think first and foremost, they want us to protect the industry to make sure that they have at least a level playing field to grow their businesses into the future. And the second thing is, I think franchisors or the multi-unit franchisees or the single-unit franchisee or our supplier partners would ask that, and what I've seen, having been on the corporate side, having been on the trade association side, and having been on the operator side, is clearly in challenging economic times, people are looking for what is the return on investment? What is the value add I'm getting out of my dues to the IFA? What is the value I'm getting out of sponsoring A, B, or C event at the IFA? So increasingly, we need to deliver on that return on investment by developing the tools that are going to be necessary in an ever-increasingly challenging economic and public policy climate.
Very well said. And I know a lot of members of the IFA don't even know what goes on in Washington, up on Capitol Hill, the IFA's involvement. You hear a lot of times, you know, I want this, I need this, and it's really usually a very secondary request or secondary in the way of importance, but certainly important because I would say any needs of members are important. And I knew I do my share to help, and it's one of the reasons why we have Franchise Today in place, just to be able to continue to provide information to the franchisor. And I do appreciate the fact that IFA staff has been very accepting to Franchise Today. And a matter of fact, we've had David French on. We talked about FranGuard. We've had Elisa Harrison on a couple of weeks ago. Scott Lair has been on. So, and you today, I think, just was the icing on the cake. And again, I do appreciate that. And
let me stop you there for a second.
Okay.
I'll just reiterate my appreciation for all that you personally continue to do for the IFA and how you promote the IFA in many different ways. And please also give my best to Joe. I meant to get that in before, but I did enjoy meeting Joe at the D.C. Bar Association. And again, thank you for all you do for us.
Well, I appreciate that, and I know Joe appreciates that. I know he's listening in, as any good producer would, and firing me off questions left and right, bringing up points. He's definitely passionate about franchising and about the good of franchising and best practices. And I know we talk hours on end every week working on the best of what we have to offer through Franchise Today, and I know a lot in the franchise community really do appreciate that. Obviously, everything wasn't always pleasant as far as what you may have discovered or uncovered down the road, especially as you were out on the road. What things unexpectedly surprised you the most after taking the position at the IFA, if you're able to share?
Well, not one thing specifically comes to mind. I think it's more, I think there's a greater awareness now, Paul. I mentioned this is arguably one of the most, the first 2 years of this administration. Folks will tell you collectively and uniformly around town, it's one of the most anti-business pro-regulatory environments they've seen in decades. So I think what I have been hearing, if you will, at the grassroots level is, Steve, tell us about this health care bill and what it means, and are they going to extend the tax cuts? Do they understand the ramifications to our businesses for all, by not extending for all income levels? And, I think there's a greater awareness of the issues out there, whether it's, labor issues or immigration issues or it's credit access like we talked about. I think there's a greater awareness now because when the health care bill was passed, it's like somebody rang the bell. Oh, wow, that's passed. Oh, and by the way, if you haven't read the, the thousands of pages in it, which most of the folks in town did not, here's how here's a whole myriad way, list of ways that this bill is going to negatively, impact your bottom line, whether you have one unit or 50 units or 200 units. Companies of all sizes are going to be impacted by that bill. So I think there's a greater awareness at the grassroots level from a public policy perspective than there has ever been. I think that is a good thing. And I think, Paul, that directly correlates into the momentum in terms of our FranPAC growth. We had a goal this past cycle of $650,000. I'm happy to say we exceeded it by $73,000. We'll report to the FEC $723,000 for this cycle. We have a goal in the next 2 years of $750,000. And then in the 2013-2014 cycle, we have a goal of $1 million. And let me put that in context for you. Of the 259 trade associations in Washington that have PACs, there are only 50 that are $1 million PACs. And of the $150 million PACs that are a combination of unions, corporations, and trade associations, that's it. There's 150, and that includes all three of those segments, unions, corporations, and trade associations. So for the IFA potentially, in 2 to 3 to 4 years to be that $1 million PAC, that's going to allow us to support pro-business federal candidates in a wider and deeper way as we move forward. And the greater resonance of that support will clearly allow us to further, broader and deeper educate these members, both new and the existing members of Congress, on the economic impact of franchising. So there is a direct correlation, I think, with the understanding of the issues and the potential impact and the growth of the PAC. So that clearly is one of our key goals. And it's almost ironic we're doing this interview today. We have the FranPAC President's Council coming in tomorrow for a day meeting here where we'll talk about the PAC guidelines. And the FranPAC President's Council is a group of 18 franchise leaders across the supplier, franchisor, and multi-unit franchisee communities. I have three chairs, Shelley Sun from Brightstar representing the franchisors. I have Ron Fellman from Siegel Financial representing the suppliers. And I have Aslam Khan, a multi-unit Church's Chicken franchisee and a member of the IFA board, leading the multi-unit franchisee group. And there are five folks under each of them in their respective categories or segments, if you will, that are going to help us to try to bridge that gap between $100,000 and $1 million. Because we still have to remember, we just entered a new cycle here on January 1. So not only, Paul, do we have to retain that $723,000 moving forward, but we got to build on it by $250,000 plus to get to that $1 million level. So it is a huge task, but I think one that is going to make it somewhat easier is the greater understanding and willingness of our membership to get involved, which leads to Franchise Congress, which, as you also know, we had 516 members here on September 14th when we took to the Hill to talk about all these public policy issues that could severely impact the franchising industry. And it was that day that Congress passed the Small Business Jobs Bill, which the President later signed in September, that allowed for those new SBA provisions to be a part of that bill. So, again, there's a direct correlation between the PAC's growth, the Franchise Congress growth, which is to have at least one IFA member in every congressional district across America that can go in and speak to their congresswoman or congressman and or their U.S. senators on issues of importance to franchising. So when you look at it in totality, what we do on the Hill each and every day from a lobbying standpoint and at the state level, and then you couple that with the Franchise Congress and the FranPAC, clearly now you know why the IFA has become an increasingly relevant and important voice in the small business pro-growth conversations here in Washington around creating jobs.
Yeah, I know as much as I know about the IFA. You're actually just adding to it today, and I know I personally appreciate that. Matter of fact, as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, boy, anybody that's considering membership in the IFA and has any type of trepidation really needs to listen to you speak on this show today, because I don't think a lot of people really truly understand how complex and how broad the activity is, the issues are, and the movement that is required to accomplish all that needs to be accomplished. I mean, it seems to be a very major undertaking.
Well, it's what we like to do here at the IFA. It's what we've been trained to do, and we do it with passion and rigor. And, you know, we feel very fortunate. The staff, the 35 staff members here at the IFA feel very fortunate to come in to work for an organization every day that lets us do our jobs, ask them, meaning the board, for their support when needed, whether it's on a committee, it's on a task force, or a strategic initiative. That, to me, has been such a rewarding piece of this job, is to see that commitment. When I said pleasantly surprised early on in the program, no one can do it alone. And so the support of this staff with the board has just been phenomenal. And the membership is starting to come back. So we feel encouraged by what we hear and what we see and what we read each and every day. But you're right. It's a very complex and moving organization, because we need to be nimble based on how things can change so rapidly at the federal and state level. But we're committed, and we're here each and every day.
Well, and that's great, and it definitely seems to be going, continuing to go in the right direction. And with so many things going on, were there any priorities that you came in with at the outset that may have changed over the course of these last 6 or 7 months? You know, your own personal priorities.
Well, I mean, my personal priorities, first and foremost, are to follow the wonderful template that has been created in our strategic plan, which has been so aptly shared by Steve Romanello from Focus Brands the last year and a half. He has done a great job with that working group, which I was actually a part of on the beginning and when I was at Duncan. But I would say, first and foremost, my job is to make sure that myself and my team are doing everything we can to follow and execute the key tenets and elements of the strategic plan. You know, the other things that when I walked in the door that I knew I needed to do was to travel and get out and see the membership. I've told you I've done that so I could get a better sense and a pulse, if you will, for what they're thinking, feeling, and why. I felt that we could build on the success of our website, both in terms of look and feel and navigation enhancements. We've done that. It was very important to Ken Walker, our chairman, with the support of Jack Earl and myself, that we bring our past chairman and chairwomen together. Many, many bright folks with incredible experience and wisdom across multiple franchising segments. So we had a past chairman summit in November post-election. I think it was November 16th and 17th. We had him here for a nice dinner. We had Steve Moore from the Wall Street Journal talk about the economic implications, potential economic implications, if you will, to the recent election results. And the next morning we had Stu Rothenberg, one of the two top political prognosticators here in Washington, along with Charlie Cook, giving an election analysis to the group. And then we had an open dialogue, an exchange of ideas on the strategic plan, and any new ideas and or initiatives that we're not currently focused on, perhaps we should be focused on. So that was something new that was important that we also achieved this year. Clearly, figuring out a way strategically to make that last hurdle to get to the $1 million. So creating that FranPAC President's Council was very, very important. And, of course, the Small Business Lending Summit. We just really started to crank that up around Thanksgiving in terms of the conceptualization of that. So that is coming along at a rapid pace. And, of course, we had our public affairs conference, and we had an executive leadership conference in October and a board meeting. So it's been, I look back and say, where did the 7 months go? But I can say it's gone quickly, but it's been very rewarding and fulfilling. But, you know, again, we have a long, long way to go, you know, and I clearly think as we get back to the economy, Paul, you know, I think, you know, we're encouraged at our data. Economic data shows moderately stronger growth for this year, especially after being flat last year. The U.S. Chamber predicts 3.2% overall growth in 2011. So, you know, if you look at franchising at 2.5%, growth projected this year, you know, you can see that we're an important cog in that wheel. I also think the extension of both the Bush-era tax cuts and unemployment benefits, along with the 2% payroll tax cut, and clearly, and most importantly, a more bipartisan tone here in Washington will hopefully create those pro-growth policies that I talked about previously that can translate into greater business and consumer confidence. So, you know, again, that being said, while some deals are getting done and opportunities are out there, and clearly they are, access to credit remains our number one issue. So until that's resolved, it's going to continue to put a chokehold on our industry's ability to be the locomotive of job growth that we have proven to be historically. So quite simply, if access to credit doesn't significantly improve in some franchise, small businesses will have a tough time thriving and in some cases surviving. So that's where our focus needs to be.
Right, and we definitely do need to push on. And I know we came in and out of the discussion about the franchise business economic outlook. You touched on a wealth of information in there. Is there anything else in the franchise business economic outlook that you would like to discuss at this point or highlight or point out as we move on, and because I want to talk some about the upcoming IFA convention.
Yeah, sure. I think just to close the loop on the economic outlook, I think what's not only encouraging, separate from the overall growth for establishments, jobs, and economic output, is that every line, major line of business that we represent is scheduled to increase with the exception of business services. And with business services, I think it's down, it was projected to be down 1 point, I believe, off of last year. And I think essentially that is because there are less businesses. A lot of businesses went out of business. So when businesses go out of business, that affects the business services sector. So, but if you look at automotive, they're projected to do really well. People are taking better care of their cars, and that's boded well for the automotive industry. Lodging, 4.4%. You know, you see business meetings and conventions starting to pick up. I know we're going to talk about our convention in a minute. And I'm excited to do so. And you also see, a little loosening of from consumers in terms of, you know, maybe taking that vacation this year that they might have put off a year or two ago. So if you look at lodging, if you look at automotive, retail products and services seem to be picking up. I think that the National Retail Federation had predicted a 3.3% number for the month of December, and actually consumer sales beat it by 2 points, five and change. So I think, you know, the combination of what I talked about earlier in terms of extending the Bush tax cuts, the unemployment benefits, the payroll tax cut, a more bipartisan tone here in Washington is lending to some hope, if you will, with both businesses and consumers in terms of their confidence. So we just need to keep, as I said earlier, the pedal to the metal to make sure we're doing everything we can here to sustain and grow that moving forward.
And there is a webinar of sorts tomorrow afternoon that's going to talk further about the franchise business economic outlook for 2011.
That's correct. You know, I'll be on that with Ken Walker, our chairman, and Drew Lyon from our research partner, PricewaterhouseCoopers.
Right, and I think that's tomorrow at 1:30. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, great. You know, as
Eastern,
I said,
Eastern. 1 p.m. Eastern.
1 p.m.
Eastern Standard Time. Yeah.
Just everybody knows that's Eastern. time. You know, and as I mentioned to Lisa when she was on the show several weeks back, I really congratulate everybody at the IFA for their work on the new, the revised website. I really like it. I find it very easy to navigate through, and I think it was a much-needed push as more and more people are online doing research. I think it's really important as well, because as we know, today's consumer and today's franchise candidates are more technologically advanced than ever before. They're also more sophisticated and educated, but you know, they're also more cautious. And I think with more of them doing their research, whether they be looking to invest in a franchise or even to purchase a product or service, they're doing that research and they're very diligent about it online. And, of course, a lot of that lends to something that's very close to my heart, which, of course, is social media. And I really like what I see going on at the IFA from that perspective. And I think Lisa and Matthew Howler have done a great job in that regard. So I wanted to extend that congratulations as well.
Well, I appreciate that, and I know you have worked closely with Elisa over the years, and she continues to do a great job in leading our revamp marketing and communications team, by the way. We now have a director of communications, Matt Haller, as you mentioned, a new director of marketing, and Kristen White was actually promoted from within, and which also leads me, you know, public policy is the key tenet, if you will, of our strategic plan, but there are two other legs to that stool. Paul, and the second leg is media relations and public relations. And, you know, with the support of our board, we've doubled our public awareness efforts for 2011, which means we will have a greater presence in venues such as the National Journal, Roll Call, CQ.com, which is congressionalquarterly.com, the short version. But essentially, inside the Beltway, must-reads for the policymakers, their staff members. So that provides us and our lobbying team more air cover, if you will, on the important issues promoting the economic impact and the direct link between credit access and job creation. So very pleased that we were able to get the board support on that. And Lisa, her team continue to do a great job. We've had several interviews over the past week on the outlook, ranging from the Wall Street Journal, the Miami Herald, FoxBusiness.com, and several others. So we're still pushing with other media venues. So we've had a lot of high-profile interviews on the outlook and public policy issues. So she and her team do a great job.
Absolutely, which leads us into the IFA convention. IFA 2011, which is coming up in February 14th through 16th in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand. I certainly will be there. And it's an exciting time. Though the IFA convention last year in San Antonio, there was still a little trepidation about where the economy was going, and it seemed like everybody was there to maybe look for that silver bullet, that silver lining that lied ahead to be able to recover. And this year, as I keep my ear to the ground talking with franchisors and franchisees alike, it seems like everybody's excited about, you know, the potential, about the future, about moving forward. And I really think it's going to be an exciting convention, and I'm certainly looking forward to it and looking forward to participating. I think I'm involved in two roundtable discussions, one at the Tech Summit about mobile marketing and franchising, and then, of course, at the other roundtable discussion, I'll be talking about social media and lead generation. And it's just an exciting time, and it's an exciting time for the IFA and the industry. What's it going to be like for you? I mean, first year at the helm, I mean, the first convention while you're at the helm is definitely got to be exciting for you as well.
Well, it's very exciting, but first and foremost, if we only have you involved in two of the panels or the sessions, clearly you're not working hard enough, Paul. Just kidding. But you're right. This is our 51st convention. It's at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, February 13th to the 16th. We have two incredible keynote speakers in Mitt Romney and Steve Forbes. And based what's going on with the economy, the convention committee led by Jack Earl, with strong support from the membership of that committee, really thought it was wise for us to hear from these two business stalwarts. So we're excited to have them. We're expecting over 2,500 attendees. Registration is coming along very, very strong. We're above last year's numbers, which is very encouraging. We're going to have Joe DePinto, who's the CEO of 7-Eleven, as you know, which is the world's largest convenience store, talk one of the keynote addresses about their company's success. John Luther, my former boss and IFA officer and the chairman of Dunkin' Brands, will lead the popular panel of the pros, where franchise leaders address the critical issues that they face in today's climate. And Ken Walker, you know, will end his tenure as chairman. And as I mentioned before, he's done a fantastic job leading the organization in the transitional year. Can't say enough great things about Ken and his commitment to IFA. It goes without saying. I mean, we were very, very fortunate to have Ken at the helm this year. But his year will end, but he'll stay engaged in many ways. And we are going to welcome Jack Earl, our current vice chair and a longtime IFA supporter, as our new chairman, multi-unit franchisee, again, from the Philadelphia area, and the first person from McDonald's in that position in the 51 years of the IFA. So we're excited about that. The Popular Business Leader Roundtables are back. Attendees will be able to visit with leading franchise executives from top IFI members. We're going to bestow our major awards, which, you know, your listeners are very familiar, the Hall of Fame, the Bonnie Levine Entrepreneur of the Year, the Ron Harrison Diversity Award. We're also going to be releasing some new benchmarking program for franchises, where companies will be able to electronically measure themselves, their companies, against others in the industry. And this has been a year-long effort by the OnTrack Task Force, which it's called OnTrack, and that was the vision of Ken. So, you know, he's been busy on many fronts, as you can see. And we're going to host, you know, educational sessions, everything from how to use social media, as you mentioned, and technology in your franchise company, to financing, loan development, and, of course, sessions on our new compliance program, FranGuard, for new and emerging franchisors. And the exhibit hall is still very popular. Attendees will be able to visit over 200 exhibits from some of the industry's top supplier companies. So, you know, I urge you to take a look at our brochure, meaning your listeners, on our website, franchise.org. And if you haven't registered, please do so, because to your point, Paul, we're very excited about it. And, you know, Las Vegas is a great, great convention city. And with over 2,500 attendees projected to come and still a challenging economic climate, we're very, very gratified by those projected numbers to date. So,
and certainly, and I do agree with you about working harder. I should be more involved, and would love to be more involved. So, if Elisa and Scott and everybody else are listening, you know, hey, get me involved. I'm more than willing.
Well, I've got my staff meeting next Monday with them, so I'll make sure that they get on the case real quick.
Well, there you go. Well, Steve, on behalf of our co-producer, Joe Caruso, and myself, I really thank you for being a guest on Franchise Today, and I do look forward to meeting you in person, even if it's for 30 seconds, at the upcoming IFA convention.
Well, Paul, I look forward to meeting you, and hopefully we can meet for at least a couple of minutes, if not more. And again, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to come on after my first 7 months at the IFA. And if your listeners take away anything from today, it's that we've had a very seamless and strong transition from Matt Shea, my predecessor, who did a great job, and is a good friend, and we see each other often in town. And that we continue to work hard on behalf of the IFA and the franchising industry as a whole. And that's my commitment, and that's our commitment, that we're going to continue to do that, so that we can continue to enhance franchising both in Capitol Hill and around the country for both existing and prospective franchisees and franchisors and the suppliers that work so diligently to support them.
Sure. Well, thanks again, Steve. And for all our listeners who have yet to register for the IFA convention, you can go to the IFA website at www.franchise.org. Or, as I make it convenient as well, you can go to the Franchise Essential site at fmdpro.com, click on the IFA 2011 logo, which will direct you to the convention registration page. And also, for all that are tweeting about the convention, please continue using the hashtag IFA2011. Next week, Joe Caruso has scheduled another riveting show for us. Nancy Weingartner, editor of Franchise Times, will again be my guest. And of course, I always love speaking with Nancy, as she's typically in the know when it comes to franchise news and happenings. And I'd also like to thank Michael Stone, my guest from last week. Michael's doing some great things with professional athletes as they leave the world of professional sports and explore franchising as their next step in life. And remember, all segments of Franchise Today, including today's segment, are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. Until next week, I'm Paul Segretto, wishing you the best in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.